Okay, so I am back here. So there are some examples of legal measures. There are more. I recommend the article. I recommend the article by Tyler Moore as to other measures. The main problem is that these recommendations, they need to be taken up by governments, they need to be international, they need to be controlled and so on. So it's a long, long way to make them effective. So it's important to go this way, but we need to do other things as well. So what can we do in addition? So I will argue, and I already hinted at that, that there are boomerang effects from misaligned incentives. You know, a boomerang is something you throw and comes back. If it's badly thrown, it comes back and hit you. So I think that I am using the metaphor that in terms of misaligned incentives, this is a badly thrown boomerang that can hit back. The lessons from the ATM case are like this. Let me summarize again. The European banks, they thought that was a wonderful opportunity, an easy ride, by letting the customers pay the price for bad ATM security. They had to prove, they had the burden of proof, if they challenged transactions. Whereas in the US, the law forced the US banks to assume the burden of proof. In Europe, you had an avalanche of fraud because the banks neglected their security, which caused scandals, dissatisfied customers, bad publicity, loss of face, less interest from ATMs, and so on and so on. In the end, the European banks had to compensate their customers and they had to improve the security at a very costly price. While ATM security was and continued to be higher and cheaper to assume to accomplish in the US. And that was because of the misaligned incentives that led to a bad security design. So you see here that what was seen as a short-term advantage or as an advantage turned out to have very negative consequences. So I think it's important to make this very, very clear, and that's why I started a study of a simulation model to understand the mechanism driving these aspects. And I am going to show you the details of the system dynamic models. Again, my motivation here is not to make you modelers here and now. Maybe some of you get interested in that and invest in learning VenSim and whatever. But my point is rather to convince you that here is a wonderful opportunity for doing new things. And I have pointed the way to you. One way of doing that is if you convince your organization, we have this problem, let's create a system dynamic model in a group model building process, or you can engage a system dynamics modeler to come and give some short course on system dynamics model so that the people understand that and decide whether they want to invest. So my point is not that you should be expert modelers, although I like if you do and construct small models. I rather try to come to explain them to you so that you see the logic. Okay? So let's look at the system dynamics model for European ATM security. Let's increase it so that you can see the important sectors. I am going to point at the parts that are essential. Consider vulnerabilities. In software, we have undiscovered vulnerabilities. When the software is released, the vulnerabilities are undiscovered. But similarly, also in the ATMs. The weaknesses, the things that make the ATMs to be, that could be exploited, some of them can even be software related. But others can be related to the readers of the cards, to how you can cheat it, or to ways of stealing the pins and whatever, all kind of things. So there are a number of weaknesses in the ATMs that have not been discovered. We call them dormant vulnerabilities. When they are activated, discovered, they can be exploited. And they can be activated by active processes of discovering them, in looking at the how the ATM looks like, see how it can be exploited, try to get inside information, you name it. So once these vulnerabilities are active, they can be used for fraud. What can a bank do that has already installed ATMs with a number of dormant vulnerabilities? Well, what the bank can do is two things. As soon as the vulnerabilities become known, they become known normally by fraud. If you investigate and pursue, see what happened, why was this fraud done, what was the mechanism that was exploited, what was the vulnerability, then you learn about that and you can fix it. So you have a process of fixing the vulnerabilities. Or you could invest also in proactive discovery of dormant vulnerabilities so as to remove them before they are exploited. So again, you have a stock of dormant vulnerabilities. They become active and they can be exploited. When they are exploited, they can be traced, you can understand the reasons, and then you can fix the vulnerabilities. This is this part. But you can also spend time and resources in discovering undiscovered vulnerabilities, so to speak, by white hackers, so as to remove them before they are exploited. Both things are possible. This one, removing undiscovered vulnerabilities, is costly, but it has the advantage that it prevents fraud. This one is less costly, fixing vulnerabilities, but it comes retroactively and after fraud has occurred. Now, consider what happens now from the point of view of the customers and the non-customers. In principle, the customers of the bank, we are speaking of Europe, could produce customer fraud. So that is, they could exploit the vulnerabilities. But this is not so very attractive because they have the burden of proof. Here you have the burden of proof on that. So this reduces the probability that the customers will conduct fraud because they know if they claim this was fraud, it was somebody else has taken my money, and they have to prove that. Let's say some customer has cheated and tries to blame somebody else. He has to prove that it was somebody else. This is very, very small probability. So because the banks demand the proof of that, the probability that customers create fraud is small. So the amount of customer fraud exploiting the active vulnerabilities is small, because the customer is made liable. This is the balancing loop there. What about the crooks? Okay, there are a lot of fraudsters out in the world. I call them potential non-customer fraudsters. They can become fraudsters, they can become active by being recruited. How do they get recruited? Well, normally they get recruited because they see that there is an opportunity. And then that acts as kind of word of mouth. The more people that are having success, the more people that are recruited to that. So this structure here is showing a transition from people who could become fraudsters, becoming fraudsters, being attracted by the possibility of committing fraud, which means they hear about the vulnerabilities, active vulnerabilities, and this increases their probability of committing fraud from the number of people who could be fraudsters. Now, if you look at this part here, the recruitment of the fraudsters, you should be able to recognize the structure. How many of you see there something you have seen before? Forget about the names. Look just at a stock here of something that is potential being converted on something that is active, and having a process of contacts and word of mouth, and another of diminishing of potential targets. You have seen that before. Do you know what I am meaning? Any proposals? I have alerted you before that that models in system dynamics turn out to be often to cross frontiers. Something that can be used in some problem turns out to be applicable in other problem. You see that in archetypes, but you see it also in model structures. So you have seen this before. You only have to change the names here. This process where you are, something is attracting something to move from here to there. No comments, no proposals? Okay. Look at the tutorial on Vensim that I provided you. Does it help you? Remember the tutorial. There were two models that we had developed there. And the second model was okay, then I must reveal it. It's the virus epidemic. It's exactly the same structure. Non-infected PCs, infected PCs, infection rate. Infection rate because of contacts between those infected and the non-infected. Here, those who know the tricks communicate then and that attracts other people to come, so they recruit then. But as more and more potential non-customers, fraudsters, become fraudsters, then this decreases and so on. So this is the process that you have seen in the virus epidemic. This can be used to innovation of ideas, to introduction of services and products, and in this case, recruitment of crooks or fraudsters, by word of mouth. That's basically the same mechanism. Okay, so this increases the number of people who may commit fraud. They commit fraud because they are active vulnerabilities. This increases the amount of that. Yes, that's what I meant. This structure here is similar to the virus epidemic that applies both to computer viruses or real epidemics, yes. But it expresses this mechanism. Always when you have a mechanism where you have something that could be potentially active and becomes active through contacts between those who are active and those who are not yet active. So that's what happened here. But they are potential, they are customers, but they need opportunity. And opportunity, they are active vulnerabilities. The more fraud that is committed. Now what happens over time is that more and more fraud is committed. That increases, of course, the proportion between fraud committed by real crooks versus committed by customers. This is the mechanism that increases the pressure to improve ATN security. Because the more and more people that are innocently suffering from transactions, the greater the pressure becomes for the banks to do something that is to fix the vulnerabilities and to increase also the pressure to remove the vulnerabilities. But this happens late because the bank have start only act when this pressure becomes very big. So finally you get the awakening of the bank from this. Compare now with the next case, which is the US case. And you see pretty much of the same model. You have here again, exactly as before, the dormant vulnerabilities in the ATMs and the active vulnerabilities. And you have the two processes, activation of vulnerabilities and fixing of vulnerabilities, and removal of vulnerabilities in advance. Even if you assume that to begin with, both ATMs had the same number of vulnerabilities, that they were equally secure, which was not the case. Because the American banks, they were much more proactive. But assume the worst case. They were exactly the same ATMs. But the pressure to act will be much bigger in the American case. Why? First of all, you have, again, the same structures of recruitment of fraudsters. But remember, the fraudsters are attracted by word of mouth. And the word of mouth is influenced by how many opportunities there are. They must hear it is profitable to commit fraud, and they must know or believe that there are a lot of vulnerabilities in the ATM that they can exploit. So this process of recruiting the fraudsters is much lower in the American case. Why? Because there will be less fraud, because the banks invest much more in vulnerability fixing and vulnerability removal. So what is the mechanism pressuring the banks to fix the vulnerabilities and to act? Simply, they have an acceptable fraud rate. That is the fraud that doesn't compensate financially to prosecute because it's too little and too few. If this increases to a certain threshold, then the bank's pressure increases to fix the vulnerabilities in advance or so. But it is related to some threshold that the bank set, and the customers know that the threshold is relatively slow, so the attractive is not so big, so the process for recruiting customers and committing fraud is small. Let's show that in simulation. Now we simulate a number of things. Here you have the total fraud committed in American banks over the years and the European banks. Total accumulated fraud. Here you see the simulation of the fraud rate, how much fraud that is occurring per unit of time in America banks, in European banks. Here it started to decrease. Why? Because the pressure in the end became so big, and perhaps also because the targets, the number of vulnerabilities started to be reduced and become less frequent. Tremendous difference between America, blue, and European banks. Here you see the pressure to improve ATM security. It was very high in the American case to begin with. It was reduced as fraud decreased and vulnerabilities decreased because they were eliminated. In the case of the European, very low pressure that gradually increased with the scandal, the avalanche of fraud, but never became as strong to do and to act as in the American case. Active vulnerabilities. Compare how many more active vulnerabilities there were in the ATMs in the European case as compared with the American case, the blue one. Fixing of vulnerabilities. The American banks acted very quickly to fix as many as possible. Then few were left. The European banks acted much later and much less effectively. Dormant vulnerabilities. The European banks were less able and less interested in taking their vulnerabilities away before they became active as compared to the American case. So all in all, you see a much more effective security in the case of European banks. So what is the conclusion? If you read the articles by Ross Anderson and Tyler Moore and others, they put a lot of arguments in that misaligned incentives hit third parties. And that's correct. But if you look in long-term effects, because security symptoms are very complex, because of the propagation of effects, long-term effects with delays, resulting in unexpected counterintuitive dynamic behavior, the unintended side effects act as boomerangs that come back and hit those who thrown them. They impact hardest on the owner of the security defenses who intends to push the cost of bad security to third parties. Of course, this is, at the time being, only a study related to ATMs. I will continue developing system dynamic models for other things. And here there are also opportunities for, if you are interested, for master projects. But here we will have more of developing new system dynamic models. Still, they are not so complex. If you look at the system dynamic model that we had here, well, okay, going back. They are not so complex as others that we have seen before. So I guess there are about 40, 50 factors and so on. And then you see standard structures. This you know, you have seen before. This is a very simple structure. This process is also relatively simple and so on. So they are not so difficult to do. Still, they would require some practice and some interest, perhaps an own learning of Vensim and so on. But still, that is the possibility. But the main conclusion that I think is by creating and publishing good system dynamics model, and they can be published in the web. In fact, this model that you have seen before, it is in principle accessible via the web page of NTNU. We have you can do an internet simulation on that. If you are interested, I can send you the link. There's hope that a number of system dynamic models, well documented and so on, will lead that those who are responsible for security, the principal, will become over time more reluctant to transfer responsibility for security to third parties on insight. So that's my hope. And this finishes this lecture. Any questions related to the lecture? I will send the link, yes. I will try to find it in the next break and put it in an announcement in Blackboard. Other questions, other comments? Do you think this is interesting, the question of incentives and the relation to security? Yes, okay, very good. Well, yes, that's a good comment of William. The company side, if you have a company, let's take the case of Norwegian Defence. Norwegian Defence has outsourced the question of equipment. They have an own sector that deals with equipment, and they have relations to a number of companies that deliver all kind of equipment. Now, it is very important in such situations to look at the different incentives, because in principle everybody is considering their own interests and they will go perhaps in different directions. So if you are working for a company, and William is, ABB, then here could be a possibility of consider the supply chain and the security of the supply chain from the light of the incentives of the suppliers. Because a supply chain for ABM, or if ABM is part of another supply chain of deliveries, they have to rely on corporations, and these corporations depend on how much effort they put on that in securing the information, depend on whether the interests are aligned or disaligned. So considering the incentives to align, both in short term and long term, could be an interesting project. And there the company's viewpoint will be very important. So it's not only about software and vulnerabilities, it's also about the relation between companies that are sharing information. Okay, thank you. Then one more lecture, and in the last time, then we can spend more time on looking ahead on possibilities and so on. I want to come back to critical infrastructure and illustrate you how a system dynamic model can be constructed to analyze what happens if there is an attack or a disaster that hits ICT critical infrastructure. ICT critical infrastructure is perhaps the most critical of all infrastructures, because everything depends on that. So we speak of critical infrastructure about when we mean infrastructure that are essential for society. So like finance infrastructure, transport infrastructure, energy infrastructure, health, government, you name it. There are about 8 to 10 different sectors that are considered to be critical for society. And if you look at in the web, you will find, for instance, Wikipedia, you will find a lot about critical infrastructure. Now, they are all connected, and since all depend on information, on networks, on computers, and so on, so if something happens to ICT, to networks, and so on, which is serious, this will impact everything else. So I will now show you how we structures to exemplify cascading effect and risks to critical infrastructure that originate in failures in ICT critical infrastructure. And I will do that, yes, again, to convince you that system dynamic models have some use, even if this is still a baby model, because in reality it's much more complex, but I will simplify in terms of aggregating things. And also, I am not considering all critical infrastructures, but only the relation between ICT, energy, and transport. Of course, all this will have repercussions on finances. It will also affect health. It will affect all kinds of things. But let's build such a model step by step, so that you get an insight in them and can play with the model, or if you like, you can construct it yourself. In Blackboard, you find the slides, but you find also all the models. I think there are 6 models that we are having a look at. So let's start with the first slides. Simple, I didn't put simple here, but it is. Simple system dynamics model for cascading effects from attack on ICT critical infrastructure. Could be an attack, but it could be a failure, for instance, from extreme weather. In November, for instance, about 10,000 people in the area of Agder, where I live, were for more than 2 days without electricity, and that impacted our possibility to be connected in all kinds of ways. So it was a minor disaster for ICT critical infrastructure deriving from the energy critical infrastructure in the sector of the region of Agder. So what do we want to do? We want to describe a disaster, whether man-made or by natural causes, that leads to the capacity of the ICT critical infrastructure is down to only 50%. The disaster, as I said, could be provoked by hackers or could be a extreme weather event. As such, does not need to be explicitly described. We will rather create a pulse. You have seen the pulse before. That hits the critical infrastructure and diminishes its capacity to 50%. When this happens, this will have consequences to the energy critical infrastructure, because they need their networks to operate. So this will be a cascading effect. And there will be time delays in that. So there we will see use for time delays. And then these effects will propagate, impacting on transport as well. Because if energy is restricted and communication is restricted, then that has consequences for transport. But of course, the consequences of energy and transport can hit back. It will delay the repairs on the critical infrastructure of networks and so on and so on. So there you will have feedback loops hitting back. So to speak, the cascading effects that propagate to energy and transport will continue propagating back to ICT. And as I said, you could add other things. So the emphasis in the model is simply to understand, so that you understand how you create structures that recreate these processes. without looking too keenly on the details. It's more about the structures of the stocks and the flows, about the connections between the different structures, as to using delays and so on. It's very simple maths that I am using, much simpler than we have to do in reality. So I would call these concept models, models that are not exact, but that allows you to understand the things a bit better, to ask more elevated questions, to get some insight as to the utility of system dynamic models and so on and so on, the kind of things that are important for this course. And also in terms of understanding that by making the model, you necessarily have to use parameters that can be measures. So you have to think of metrics, especially if you want the model to simulate to so good that it's able to reproduce some reality. So please, at any time, raise your hand if you need more explanations or have questions or critical comments. So we will build it stepwise. And in the first step, the only thing I want to show is a stock that will simulate the capacity of a critical infrastructure. And then a pulse comes, occurring at time 20, so that the capacity goes down. And you find this file in Blackboard. It's called Simple Disaster with Pulse. NDL is the extension in Vensim. I will show the Vensim file in a moment as well. But first, the slide. So the structure is very, very simple. In this talk, we represent the capacity of the critical infrastructure. How to measure the capacity will be different depending on what kind of critical infrastructure is. So a measure for ICT could be the number of nodes. It could be some other activities on the nodes and so on. Perhaps you even you need several measures and so on. In energy, that could be energy that is available for utilization. In transport, it could be the number of transport lorries or whatever that are transporting things that are relevant for repairing the infrastructure and so on. So at this level, we are not discussing in detail the metrics, but rather, because remember, this model is generic and it's a concept model. But if the model will be extended to represent some reality, then it will become critical to identify the right indicators and how to measure them and so on. For the time being, we stay at a very high level and represent some capacity by a number between 0 and 1. 0 is nothing. 1 is maximum capacity in this structure. And capacity is related to the ability of this critical infrastructure to deliver what it's supposed to do. If it is information, that is information. If it is energy, it's energy. If it is transport, then it will be measured by measurable items that need to be transported for the functioning of industry, of society, and so on. So you create this stock, you have this flow out, because if a disaster occurs, it will steal away, destroy, and reduce what is in here. So the flow is disaster destruction. And we assume that the event has some duration and has some impact. And we will compute the impact and duration from a factor that I will show in a moment. And when you simulate this, you have originally full capacity, and then suddenly a shock comes, a pulse. Here you see the pulse, and it hits that down. Here the pulse has a certain duration. Later we will make the pulse instantaneous, as you saw that before in another model. So now what you can do with the model, and I will switch over to Vensim. If you want to see the model equations, you can inspect the equations one by one by clicking on an icon called Document. and you can see either one or all the equations. And now I will simulate, I will show that in VenSim. So I stop this. I go now to share application, entire screen, share, and I open VenSim PLE. I have a professional version, the DSS, but that looks a bit different. So I take this one. And now I open the VenSim model, the same VenSim model that you have in Blackboard. I have it here. Simple disaster with pulse. Control panel, data sets. I delete the previous data sets. Remember, this is because I am naughty and I have all the models in the same folder. So I take them away. They will appear when you simulate, they are created. The simulation file name I call test simple disaster with pulse. I don't know why I put the one here. And if you click on that, then you get the structures that you see there. Now, how do you see the equations? You can click on something like CI level, click on document, and there you get the documentation. The CI level is computed by aggregating or integrating the flow disaster destruction, which is negative because it takes capacity away. And the one here is the original value of the CI level. We use 1 for maximum capacity, 0 for minimum capacity. So it's a percentage or a level between 0 and 1. The units of measure here is giving us nothing, dimensionless. But in a real model, we will use some units that are related to something that we count and measure. The documentation is, this is a stock representing the critical infrastructure capacity measured in dimensionless units between 0, no capacity, and unity maximum capacity. So this you can do with anyone. Click on document, and you get the whole documentation, which in principle reproduce what you will see if you click on this and this. This is the same thing, only that here is spread over our different factors. The units are here. The equation is here. The documentation is here, and so on. You could look at the whole model by clicking on document all, and there you get everything. CI level, disaster destruction, duration, and so on, including the selected time step, the initial time, the way the information is saved in the RAM. This is an internal thing in VenSim, and so on and so on. And by the way, this is a text file that you can save, and so on. Okay, so let me explain a little bit that. We want, this here is a pulse, as you can see. VenSim has a function that is called pulse, this one. It takes 2 parameters. The first parameter is the time when it happens, and here we put 20 units. The scale is days, so we let this event happen at day 20. And the other thing is the duration of the pulse. There are 2 inputs. I did a mistake. Cancel. Go back. There are 2 inputs here, duration and impact, that enter here. Impact is the strength of the pulse, because remember, the function pulse has strength 1. So impact is a quantity that says how big is the impact on the infrastructure. And duration is the time that it takes to do that. So as you see here in the documentation, it describes the effect of the disaster as a pulse of height impact and with duration. And remember that what happens in the simulation is that an area is computed. And the area is the product of the impact times the duration. Okay? The way I did that is that I created a factor of value 1. You can change that. And the duration, I put as 2 divided by the factor. So it means it's 2. Whereas the impact is 0.25 times the factor. Why do I use the factor? Because I wanted to have a model where if I change the duration, I would have to change the impact accordingly, so as in all cases to have the same disaster effect. So this is simply a way of ensuring that if I make the duration longer, the height will be lower, so that the ultimate impact will be the same. So that's a very simple model. So if I now change the factor here in some way, let's do that by synthesim. If I put a factor instead of 1, 2, let's see what happens. It should be now a different pulse, but with the same area. And the result simulating should be the same on the left, not on the right. So I put factor 2. And you see the height is twice, the width is the half, the simulated impact is the same here. So that was the idea of doing it this way. If I put now 4 here, the height is 4 times higher than before, the width is even smaller, and what you see here is the same in principle. Okay. Any questions to this model? Any questions to this? Okay. So, no question. I see we will have a break in a moment again. I continue with the file. The next models will become simpler, hopefully. Not simpler. They are more complicated, but simpler to understand. That's what I meant. So, what we want to do now is to make the pulse to the last stimuli short. So, it's basically making the duration equal to the time step. You have the file here, and the model is something that you have seen before in terms of now. The duration is the time step. And using a structure as you have seen before, where the height of the pulse is some number divided by the time step, and duration of the pulse is the time step, this ensures that no matter what time step you choose, you have the same impact of the pulse. And basically simulate as before, only that the duration is the time step, also thinner than before. So in principle, you have seen such model before, or a similar thing, so this shouldn't be a surprise for you. But then after the break, which will come in 1 minute, we will now extend the model with a recovery. I can already introduce that. So the disaster occurs, but then there is a recovery process, recovering the capacity of that. And the requirement is to simulate that, so that the capacity is virtually the same as it was initially, 75 days after the disaster disruption. The model is in Blackboard, and if you simulate that, then you have this situation here. This part you have seen before. This part you have seen before. while this part is the new one. This is a flow entering that is recorded.